from New York City, it's The Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null. Today, how peppermint tea can boost memory. From Northumbria University in the United Kingdom. And about 17 other important health-related topics. My guest in the last part of our program today will be John Gilmore. He's the executive director of the Autism Action Network, and we're going to talk about the vaccine bills in New York State Legislature and action to take. Also, Dr. Penn evidently was up there and trying to promote his own form of pro-vaccine propaganda. And some of the people in this audience were up there to challenge that. And we'll talk about that and what we need to do in order to have our freedom of choice. So those two are important issues today. Then I'm going to take us on a little tour of what's happening in the progressive world. For example, when you have outstanding award-winning journalists such as Max Blumenthal, and yet they're doing all they can to silence him, where the mainstream media stands by and does nothing. Also, the campaign against Professor Camille Paglia. She is a controversial feminist. You can agree or disagree with any particular point of view, but one thing is agreeable, and that is that she is one of the smartest, most knowledgeable historians on the relationship between men and women. And should she be thrown out of college because a couple of people don't like what she's saying and feel threatened, their very existence threatened by something that this iconic feminist has to say that they don't like? Well, you can hear for yourself, because I'm going to have her on. Then there's a report that was leaked from the OPCW that shows that the sarin gas attack was staged. An MIT scientist did the homework on this. This is very important because we've seen from three separate independent journalists, including Seymour Hersh, that the very provocation of invading Syria full throttle and destroying it and taking out Assad and all of his supporters was based upon lies. We now can prove through the WikiLeaks leaked emails that Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama and their national security staff knowingly supported the terrorist groups, ISIS, Al-Qaeda, at the same time that they were being shown beheading people and burning people in cages, horrific acts of violence. We were, along with Saudi Arabia and Turkey in the United Arab Emirates, we were supporting them because we wanted regime change, much like we supported the Mujahideen in the 1980s against Russia in Afghanistan, and it finally caused the Russians to say, we don't want another American Vietnam, being a Russian Vietnam in Afghanistan, that's what we're in for, so they left. But those very same Mujahideen that we had trained and armed and funded, they didn't go away. So we have this long sordid history of supporting the very people that we then say we need a gigantic amount of military industrial complex input in order to stop them. It seems impossible for a reasonable person to make sense of this, but we'll try to break all this down and show you that Assad is not the one using gas in Syria. British, French, American, Italian groups supporting terrorists have been doing it, and we have the proof of that. This is stuff you will not hear anywhere else from the experts. Then we'll go to your calls today and see what you have to say. We had some very positive suggestions from people from my Monday show. I said, what should we do to inspire people to become aware of global warming and its impact, even if they have not personally been impacted? And there's a line that we cannot cross. We don't want to be pushy and seem as if somehow they must do this even for their own survival. People resent that. But we still have to make an honest effort to try to encourage people to become more aware of how bad global warming is and how it's already tipping. Now, I don't have time today to get into the tipping points, but there are 44 tipping points. Half of them have already tipped. There's nothing we can do to stop those. But the other half have not. And if you want to see how it's important, if we continue at the rate we're going with industrialization, for example, destroying the rainforest of Brazil, we're doing more of that now under this new president, and the people who benefit from it, like China, Japan, the United States, because cheap soybeans are grown there, then anything that we might do in some countries that is good is being undermined by China, India, Brazil, and the United States. And as of this morning, when I checked all the statistics, we have more carbon dioxide going into the air now than ever before in our history, human history. So on the one hand, you can have people say, well, it's a problem and we'll get to it in time. And then we have the Buddha who says there is no more time. He's right. They're wrong. So here's the reality, and I'd like your input on this, please. And I'll give you a number to call to share your input. We're out of time. Now, if you know anything about the Midwest and the Farm Belt, you're dealing with Indiana, Illinois, Arkansas, also in the southern quadrant of that, and then above that, you're dealing with Missouri, and then Kansas, Utah. You're dealing with places that historically are where we've relied upon as our farm belt, the seven main farm belt states. There are other around, like South Dakota, which can grow grain, durum grains, durum rice, durum wheat, I should say, and other hardier temperatures. All that's changing. And now they're all flooded. Right now as we speak, the Mississippi, the Missouri, the other rivers are flooded at historic heights and for long periods of time, which means the farmland can't be planted, which means that the farmers are not going to have an income, and those that already did plant, the seeds are already dead. You cannot have submerged seeds and have them sprout. They won't. And if they did sprout, they're dead. So you're talking about an entire year's worth of crops gone. But because we can buy grains from other places on the planet, you'll still have product in the stores. So we're given the illusion that everything is all right when it's not. And a lot of those farmers will not be able to recover from this. They're gone. If you see, I'm posting every day, I'm posting houses and communities and farms. You've got water 9 feet up on the buildings. That means there's going to be nothing but rot. That means those buildings are going to be nothing but mold. You're going to be looking at major diseases from environmental toxins like black mold. That means those are gone forever. They're going to have bulldoze them. Not 100, not 1,000, but tens of thousands of farms and homes. Not a word about this in the media. So here's the issue. The average American is not paying any attention whatsoever about global warming unless they're in it. The average professional, the policymakers and opinion leaders, the ones who have the social status, the educational background, the awareness to understand these, they're so involved in their careers that with a few exceptions, they're not diverting their attention from running hedge funds or running a hospital or running a law office. They're involved in their day-to-day lives. Their family is involved in developing a lifestyle that is contributing to global warming in direct proportion to how much money is being earned. So the more money you earn, the more money you spend. And if you don't have a savings, then you live off debt. Poor people are the first victims because they are not as able to be mobile. And they're going to suffer the worst health consequences. And when you see that we filmed going down Mississippi and down Louisiana and down through Alabama, and you'll see people don't even have electricity, don't have an outdoor toilet or indoor toilet. In fact, in some cases, a whole row of houses, these are prefab houses, you simply see a hole with a pipe that goes from a toilet inside right out into the air. I mean, right out the back door. I mean, every time they put water in that toilet bowl, it doesn't go into a septic system, doesn't go into a septic tank or leach field. It just goes right out into the lawn. If you have any idea in this weather how that's going to produce diseases and fecal contamination and the smell, and we're not talking about, again, a few people or a few hundred or a few thousand, we're talking about tens of thousands of people living in these conditions. So it's a big problem, and we're not addressing it on any level. Industry is not going to address it. The costs are simply too high, and so they're not going to. Industry hired lobbyists. The lobbyists then hired consultants and people out of the governmental agencies. They then captured different legislative oversight committees. So now you've got Congress not going to act. The president is going to do everything absolutely wrong, as will his cabinet. The average citizen feels overwhelmed. The professional class of 71 million professionals are preoccupied with other issues. Their families are engaged in living a lifestyle commensurate with massive overconsumption. So then I got a question for you. Who exactly is supposed to save us from ourselves? It's no longer about global warming or acidification of the coral reef or the die-off of mammals and whales and porpoises and jellyfish and starfish. It's about we not being the shepherds of the earth that we were supposed to be. Now, there are countries that are doing good work. There are people within countries that are not doing good work, but they personally are. But none of this is going to amount to a hill of beans, because there are numbers that are, they're non-reducible to excuses. The level of the carbon dioxide is going up. It went up 3.2% last year. We're going to reach that 2-point increase in Celsius, which means that it's over. Game over. From then on out, whole parts of the world will be in excessive heat and drought. Like just today, I posted an article on my website today on my Facebook showing 200 million Indians today are living above 122 degrees. That's a death temperature. And they don't have air conditioning, and they're dying. We have massive water bombs, so where it is raining, it's not just normal rain, it's massive amounts, which is dangerous. Flash floods, no place for the water to run off, flooding out of seeds. Temperatures rising in soils, so germs, there's not a germination process. So with these thousand things that are going wrong, the Corps of Engineers, the EPA, the Interior Department, our entire government, our entire military-industrial complex, the largest polluters in the world, our entire industries, except for those that are exploiting with the stupidity and irresponsibility of carbon caps, which we shouldn't have. You should simply stop polluting. Being able to pay for pollution and offset that with some other company is foolish in its extreme. So what are we supposed to do? I don't want to answer this question. I'm answering it in my documentary. I've answered it in a 700-page book that's coming out shortly. It's printed, but we're not releasing it yet, Saving the Planet One Bite at a Time. I want to know what you believe is a good solution, but a solution that's practical, one that is capable of being done. Or should we have any solutions? Now, the existential Nietzsche pragmatist would say, well, no one wants to do anything, so let things occur, and then when they do, maybe that's some karma people need to experience in this lifetime. If that's the only way someone will stop eating crap is to have a heart attack, then let the heart attacks begin. But that doesn't mean because people have had a heart attack that they learn a damn thing from the heart attack. Having a great deal of experience, as much as any human being on the planet, In counseling people, I've counseled over 70,000. That's a large number. I can tell you that I have yet to meet the person that learned a lesson from their crisis. Not one in my entire career can I say that someone came to me and said, "You know, Gary, I really learned something from my cancer, my heart." They always come as victims. Why me? Why me? What did I do to deserve this? So we're taking that same mindset into identity politics, the same mindset into fighting one another instead of working for the common good. We're taking the same mindset into income disparity between the have and have-nots, criminalizing people who are on the streets because they can't afford a place to live. Now we make them a criminal for living on the streets because of the income inequality that we created. So on the one hand, people can say, screw it all. Just screw it. Whatever happens in your life, Jack, you deserve. So don't come blaming your victim if you are, if it's your own inability to understand the life you're living and how to deal with it appropriately. On the other hand, is a more spiritual, more humanistic, and more kind and thoughtful way of dealing with it. It's saying, look, yeah, people make mistakes. Who doesn't? People frequently allow their earlier life conditioning to manifest in being associated with the wrong people in the wrong place, working at the wrong work. But so what? They're human beings. They're sacred souls. We have a moral responsibility to try to help them, even when they don't want to help themselves. Even when they're angry with us for helping them, we still should help them. And that's the side that I'm on. But I fully understand people who don't care, the indifference. Understanding something doesn't mean that you accept it. There's a big difference. I'm interested in what you want to see as an answer. And yesterday we had a caller, very wise caller, who said, why don't you get the Pope involved, because he is a highly respected person, and if he made one day a week plant-based, no animals, and then started to show what could be done with organic gardening and turning as much property as the Catholic Church owns, which is substantial in Italy, into community gardens, be a lot more valuable to the community than what they've been using it for all these centuries. Actually get the priests out there and put them in some work overhauls and do some real work. Put their hands in the soil and grow things and teach people how to be self-sufficient at the local level. That would be extremely beneficial. I thought that was a great idea. I'm sure we got a lot more great ideas. I'd like to hear from you. Here's the number you'll call, our voice line. 862-800-6805, 862-800-6805. Now, when it comes to the level of nutrition, we have to understand that every single thing we take in is a piece of a puzzle, and it might be 1,000 pieces of the puzzle. Well, peppermint tea is a delicious tea. I like it all year round. In the summertime, it can be chilled, made like into an iced tea. And by the way, never, ever get ice in a restaurant, and especially a bar or fast food restaurant. The bacteria in there and the fecal contamination, because people reach in, grab with their hands, and suddenly you've got their feces in your drink. In your own home, sterilize your ice trays and make sure you put a water filter system that reverse osmosis, get rid of the bacteria and any contaminants with an ultra blue light. That's the best. In any case, peppermint tea, put in the juice of one lemon and a little bit of Manuka honey, and you've got a phenomenally delicious, but also not just fragrant, but a healing cup. Now there's a study from Northumbria University, and it says that peppermint tea is also good for your memory. And this was published in the British Psychological Society's annual conference. So they tested peppermint tea against memory and cognition in 180 healthy people who were randomly selected to drink the tea. They either had chamomile tea or peppermint tea, or no tea. And they found that 20 minutes after drinking peppermint tea, that there was a boost in memory and cognitive functioning. This is brand new. This is really cool. So you drink a delicious peppermint tea, and you improve your long-term memory and increase your working memory. You enhance your alertness. That's all terrific. So, something good, something new. From Michigan State University comes a study about vitamin C and how it's associated with a longer lifespan among cancer patients. How about that? And this was published in a major top cancer journal, the Journal of Clinical Oncology. And it also was a meta-analysis. Meta means many. And this was presented at the annual meeting of the American Society of Clinical Oncology. And it showed a substantial improvement in the survival among cancer patients supplementing with vitamin C and vitamin D. Quote, in the United States, cancer is the second leading cause of mortality. As such, primary prevention of cancer is a major public health concern. Vitamin D supplementation has been studied as a primary preventative method for multiple diseases, including cardiovascular disease, osteoporosis, diabetes mellitus, and cancer. But now they found it's not just vitamin D, it's also vitamin C. So D and C together, and I would suggest 2 to 5,000 units of vitamin D a day. I would suggest between 2 to 10,000 milligrams of vitamin C a day. If you're out in the sun, if you're exercising, if you're stressed, you need more vitamin C. Also, CBDs have an effective way of helping get off heroin and opiate addiction, the ICANN School of Medicine at Mount Sinai. Now, we have this year 300,000 Americans dying of some form of problem with opiates. That's a lot of dead people. And unfortunately, the opiate receptors that take in methadone or heroin, they're also addictive themselves. So the very treatment, historically, methadone for heroin becomes itself addictive. So now they've taken a look at CBD oil and find that it can stop the craving and the anxiety that are part of addictive therapeutics. So now we have a new treatment for helping people get off these. And it was not a lot. It was 400 milligrams of CBD or 800 or, and then they had a placebo and it made a big difference. So CBD oil, that's your cannabinoids, can help you get off the heavy duty addictions. Also, they found that there is a derivative, hexacosanol, in barley sprouts. Barley sprouts are very good for you. That helps lower your cholesterol, from Korea University. And now you've heard me mention polycosanols, and they're very beneficial to our body. But these are different. These are hexacosanols derived from barley sprouts. So eat your barley sprouts. They're very good for your liver cells, very good for your metabolism. And also, from Emory University, chronic inflammation can drive down dopamine and motivation. Have you noticed in some people who seem depressed, they lack motivation? They lack that get up and do it. And now we understand one of the reasons, according to Emory University, there's growing evidence showing that the brain's dopamine system, which drives motivation, is directly affected by chronic low-grade inflammation. That's important. And this was published in Trends in Cognitive Science. So, quote, when your body is fighting an infection or healing a wound, your brain needs a mechanism to recalibrate your motivation to do other things so you don't use up too much of your energy. We now have strong evidence suggesting that the immune system disrupts the dopamine system to help the brain perform this recalibration. So quite simply, in lay language, what we need to understand is that if you have any chronic inflammation, if you have arthritis, fibromyalgia, excuse me, if you have the cancers, of the blood or the organic cancers of the brain, the liver, the lungs, the pancreas, the breast, the ovaries, you're going to be having your dopamine levels adversely affected, which will adversely affect your motivation. The key here then is building up your immune system. So it's important. That's the latest on health and healing. Oh, and one last thing from Medical University of South Carolina. Some people suffer from scleroderma, and they're now saying that higher estrogen levels is linked to more severe diseases in scleroderma. And estrogen is the quintessential female hormone. And according to the medical university, that the more of this you have in your body, the greater your risk of having scleroderma. So when you're overweight, more estrogen. When you're eating meat, estrogen. When you're stressed, estrogen. A plant-based diet, meditating, and exercising, and it's saving you from having that excess spike in what is known as estrogen dominance. We are 26 minutes into our program. We're going to take a break, and when we come back, we're going to go right into your calls and see what's on your mind and what you have to say. Look forward to being back in just a moment. Please stay with us.
Gary, until now, it was bad enough. I had to concern myself with air pollution, water pollution, food pollution. But now comes along a new one, electronic pollution. Con Edison is installing smart meters in every building and home in New York City, and they just put 50 of them into the basement of my building, directly under my apartment on the first floor. 50 cell phone-like devices pulsing microwaves into my apartment on a continuous basis. What do I do to protect myself? And is there a way to stop Con Edison from microwaving all the citizens of New York City?
Well, that's a good, legitimate question, and I'm concerned because there's nothing you can do to protect yourself. Yes, you could get one of these little pyramid-shaped, about 2 pound, that looks like a pyramid. It's made out of a black material from Russia that absorbs electromagnetic frequency. That you can get up online. They're about $100, more or less. And I even have them on my desks. In fact, I have one right in front of me now. But that's for low-level electromagnetic frequency. So if you stood about 3 feet back from your computer, which you should, you're not going to get it with the blue light and it won't manifest. You should also buy a little, it's not expensive either, electromagnetic frequency meter. So you can walk around your house and see where the hot spots are. And it will tell you whether you're in the safe range or a questionable range or dangerous range or extreme dangerous. So that's something we should all have. And it'll surprise you if you were standing by a microwave oven and it was on, you're getting a huge amount of electromagnetic frequency. So just how far away you keep your cell phone. Then you get into the smart meters and you jump up a whole different category in bad. And can we help ourselves? No. You can't. And at the same time, you're getting hit with those smart meters in your apartment right below where you're living for the whole building. You're also getting 5G towers on all the different buildings. They're cutting down all the trees on different blocks to put in these meters as well because they have a very short distance of point A to point B. It's only about 436 feet, I believe. So that means that they have to have hundreds of thousands, if not millions, of these to make sure that they're so-called great new technology that you see advertised. Well, there's an article that we've written specifically for you. Go to prn.fm, prn.fm, Progressive Radio Network, and look under a recent article on 5G. In it, all the information you need in order to give to all the different people in your building and all the surrounding buildings, and then a petition to challenge Con Ed to hold public hearings so that you can bring forth this information. And we wrote an article. We listed all the different organizations that are fighting 5G and the experts who've testified before Congress. And then if you go to our archives, you will hear the different experts testifying about how dangerous 5G is. And you'll also be able to read the letter from 22,000 scientists who are showing how bad 5G is and it should be banned. But the media is controlled completely by the providers of this, like Verizon and Sprint and the other communication companies. And they have the lobbyists, and they're controlling the legislatures at the state level and the federal government level. So this is the worst technology imaginable. It is the most dangerous. We're about in the next year to 2 years to submit more Americans to electromagnetic frequency pollution than any other pollution in American history. So this is as bad as it gets. So we need everyone to start protesting, but you have to have information to protest. I've provided you also with the videos, the articles, the calls to action, and the information that you need. All right? And then engage your other tenants to show them what they would not otherwise know. All right? You have everything you need now to start pushing back. Let's take another call.
Hi, Gary. You mentioned that watermelon seeds are high in protein. Most watermelons these days are seedless, but I found them and enjoy the crunchiness. I also used to discard papaya seeds, but now eat those too at your recommendation. What about pineapple, lemon, apple, and so on? Are any other seeds good for you or any bad for you? And which are especially helpful?
All right, that's a good question. Thank you. We have fruits called stone fruits. They contain in the seed what is called amygdalin, amygdalin. That breaks down into hydrogen cyanide when ingested. Apricots, cherries, plums, peaches, nectarines, you never want to eat the seeds. Other fruits with amygdalin would be pears and apples. So you never eat the seeds of pears and apples. Now, there are some roasted pits that break down cyanide because it's not heat stable. But again, don't use them. There are other foods I wouldn't eat the seeds. Cassava also contains naturally occurring hydrogen cyanide. Lychee, I wouldn't eat the seed. Acai, raw cashews, starfruit, raw kidney beans. But the good ones to eat would be flax seed, very high in alpha-linolenic acid, lowers your cholesterol. Chia, which is also like flax, it gets the same benefits, and it reduces hunger cravings. Hemp seeds are an excellent source of a vegetable protein, the 30% protein. Sesame seeds improves microbiome, and also there's what is called an entrolactone. It acts like an estrogen in reducing the risk of heart disease and breast cancer. Pumpkin seeds are high in phosphorus and monounsaturated fats, and they're high in phytoesterols to lower cholesterol, contributes to the prevention of bladder stones, and improves prostate health and urinary disorders. Sunflower seeds are terrific. They're high in monounsaturated fats and vitamin E and thiamine and magnesium. Papaya seeds are high in polyphenols and flavonoids, high in fiber. They have anti-parasite and antifungal qualities, anti-yeast qualities. They reduce your cholesterol, lower your blood pressure, and are anti-inflammatory for diabetics. Pistachios are great. Almonds are great. Walnuts are great, high in the omega-3 fatty acids, which reduce your blood sugar. They're anti-inflammatory and reduce cholesterol. Pecans have antioxidant properties. Macadamia nuts are anti-inflammatory, and Brazil nuts are a good source of selenium. So those are the ones I would eat. Now, the best fruit seeds would be grape seeds. That's terrific in the skin, the seed. And then watermelon could go along with that. All right, we'll take one more call.
Hi, Gary. I wonder if you know, why is there a sign in a Social Security office that says you may not record the interview or the review? Thank you.
It's the same as why the police for decades said you couldn't record them in any of their actions, and they would take away people's cameras, they would arrest people, they'd beat people up. And that's true of almost every government employee. We've gotten to where the bureaucrats, the people that are supposed to be tending to our needs, don't want to be held accountable, because once you have something filmed, you have a record of it. It's not just a he said, she said. It's here's what was done, here's the camera. We should have the ability to record video and audio of every interaction with every state, local, and federal official. That's part of our freedom of speech, and that also is part of the way that we keep government officials honest and accountable. It's something that we have to do. All right, that's the latest on people calling in. I wanted to hear, well, what we'll do if you have an idea of how to get people involved in helping with environmental issues, even though they have a lot of the excuses why they can't and shouldn't, I'd like to know what they are. So for tomorrow, I'll take those calls. Our voicemail line is 862-800-6805. Now, I'm going to play an audio clip. And this audio clip is important because we need to hear of the people who are doing good work on our behalf, such as Max Blumenthal, the journalist, and how they're trying to shut him up and close him down. In fact, all of the good journalists, Abby Martin, Chris Hedges, Nellie Bailey, Glenn Ford, Bruce Dixon, all the good ones, they're trying to censor, to push off into the wilderness. And by the way, today, YouTube announced that they're going to be taking down massive amounts of videos if those videos in any way are controversial or do not align with established views. That means all the anti-vaccine videos, the anti-GMO videos, all the videos that are truth and we need, now in comes the censorship. We are in the process today, since we had 7 million downloads of our videos, according to the report I got about a month ago, and are increasing, we're moving to 2 other sites so that we'll have all of our videos available for people, so they won't say, what happened to all your videos? So they're doing the hardest amount of work imaginable to try to keep people who have important voices from sharing their information. So we're going to be pushing back on that and providing you with a forum. Now let's hear about the campaign to silence Max Blumenthal.
Meanwhile, there's another story we're trying to get the reaction on right now. This one has to do with somebody who you've seen here on this newscast. He is a frequent contributor. He's also a very renowned author and a journalist who travels the world looking and trying to tamp down injustice. And something has happened tonight. Max Blumenthal is good enough to join us. Max, I'm so glad you're here. Max has written a book. It's called The Management of Savagery, How America's National Security State Fueled the Rise of Al-Qaeda, ISIS, and Donald Trump. Now, that's a heck of a title. It's the kind of book that makes people want to go out and buy it. And tonight, I understand that you were having a premiere, book signing, right?
I'm supposed to.
Here in Washington, D.C.
Should be on stage right now.
At the Wharf?
At Politics and Prose, the main kind of establishment bookstore in Washington.
What happened?
Been scheduled for months, and they've now postponed the talk. My book, The Management of Savagery, is a history starting in 1979 in Afghanistan of how America's covert proxy wars overseen by the CIA and its regime change wars, mm-hmm. like the war in Iraq, the war in Libya, and the war in Syria, have destabilized entire societies, caused refugee crises, and in turn caused a blowback that has fueled ultra-right politics from Europe to the United States and put the kind of Islamophobia that Donald Trump exploited on overdrive. And I think that's a kind of analysis that should get a hearing. But ever since I started talking about what I think is one of the greatest scandals of our time, Rick, mm-hmm. which is sending billions of dollars to extremist insurgents in Syria to tear that country apart, including affiliates of Al-Qaeda, who now control an entire province in Syria, the Syria Regime Change Lobby, a loosely affiliated assortment of groups, has targeted me, tried to silence me, and they targeted Politics and Prose. That's what I was told by the directors of Politics and Prose, specifically the Syrian American Council. One figure from the
Syria Regime Change
Lobby.
Lobby.
The Syria
there's
Regime
a
Change lobby,
lobby for Syria Regime Change.
Well, you've been in Miami. You know there's a Cuban American lobby.
Of course.
CONIF. And they have lobbied for regime change in Cuba. And you have a lobby here that lobbies for regime change in Syria and that was obsessed with getting the Obama administration and the Trump administration to wage a military intervention that would have been disastrous for the Middle East. And I've played a role.
And by the way, they have a right to believe whatever they want to believe. And they have a right to do whatever they want to do. But what they don't have a right to do is censor somebody who is trying to put out information that's important for the American people to hear.
Yeah, well, they don't want to have a debate. They want to shut me down because the information I put out has effectively exposed them. For example, someone affiliated with this campaign, Muaz Mustafa, a major regime change lobbyist who has lobbied for my censorship at Politics and Prose, took John McCain on his illegal trip to Syria, where John McCain posed for photographs with extremist insurgents who had kidnapped Shia pilgrims. Of course you want to cover that up. Of course you don't want my book to be heard. But my book, The Management of Savagery, exposes this scandal, and these people want to sweep it under the rug. It's
horrible,
understandable.
But it's horrible what happened to you. Even if you'd written a book about something that wasn't a good, great story, you're a wonderful author, a guy who takes his stuff very seriously.
Thank you.
You go all over the world trying to knock down injustice and report about it. And here you are. How did they tell you? What did you find out? Did you go there and they said, I'm sorry, but we're going to tell your audience to go home?
Well, you notice in the bulletin they say that they were facing some security concerns.
Yeah, here, let me read it to the audience. I'm looking at it from their website. Politics and Prose is postponing tonight's event at the Wharf with author Max Blumenthal as we work to address concerns that we have arisen over the event's format, substance, and security. We apologize for any inconvenience. Security. That's interesting.
Yeah.
Key word.
Yeah, and you know, the Syrian American Council is an organization that really has no moral place to be lecturing me. This is a group that hosted Maher Sharaf Adin, someone who went on Al Jazeera and called for the genocide of Alawites, which is something that the Syrian insurgents they support aimed to do in Syria and carried out many atrocities. They hosted him at their 2015 gala. Wow. So they basically don't want someone running around talking about this. And this, so what we're seeing is a censorship campaign to cover up one of the greatest scandals.
It is. Just like all this, the gas. No, I don't have time today to play it, but I will tomorrow. An in-depth analysis by a world scientific organization looking at who actually created the sarin gas on numerous occasions in Syria, and it was not the Syrian Assad regime. It were the U.S., CIA, Israeli, British, and French support of the ISIS and Al-Qaeda and other terrorist groups. That should make headline news. You know, something like United States supports terrorists and then wants hundreds of billions of dollars to destroy the same terrorists but never destroys them. Continues funding them. People are not stupid. People would understand the contradiction, but they're not hearing this story. By the way, I just learned from Abby Mitchell that late yesterday that S-5313, that means Senate Bill 5313, is a one-house bill. It hasn't even been introduced into the New York State Assembly, and they would have it to pass it before it would pass. And I've called Kevin McKill and urged him to do this via secretary in the legislative office. This is not impossible, and it's urgent matter for public health and environmental survival. So this is all about a bill, what is called the Schatz bill in the Washington Senate, would nullify all of our efforts to stop 5G and would strip all of us of the right of self-determination and home rule. So That's what we're up against. I will deal with that on tomorrow's show. I'll give you the information, the phone numbers of the people involved to call them to protest. This is where the heavy hand behind the scenes of all the lobbyists who have gotten all those legislators in their pocket, how they're going to ram through 5G legislation so we will not be able to protest it. The gentleman who called earlier left a message. He wouldn't be able to protest it. They know how dangerous 5G is. And they want us to believe that it's not harmful and put it through. We're now going to go over to our guest who is standing by. I mentioned him at the beginning of the program. His name is John Gilmore. He's the executive director of the Autism Action Network, which is a national, not-profit, grassroots advocacy organization that influences legislation and public policy on a wide range of important issues impacting the autism community. And he has a website, AutismActionNetwork.org. Nice to have you with us today, John.
Well, thanks for having me on, Gary.
After sitting in Albany for 6 years and with less than 2 weeks left in the legislative session, a bill to repeal religious exemption from vaccine mandates in New York State will be coming up for vote in the Assembly Health Committee on Tuesday, next Tuesday, June 11th. All those who want to preserve this precious right need to contact their state legislators immediately and come to the state capitol on Tuesday, June 11th, to advocate for our rights. And the issue is, what will the bill and the assembly do? Who are the legislators pushing for it, like State Assemblyman Jeff Dinowitz and State Senator Brad Holeman, both Democrats, and they need to be spoken with. How close is it to passing in the assembly? And California Senator Richard Pan visited New York to meet with legislators. And is New York trying to adopt California's draconian vaccine laws, which are the hardest in the nation and now leading to witch hunts against doctors? Ken Stoller is one example, who are writing exemptions for vaccines. And in California, over 50 doctors are now under investigation being orchestrated by Richard Pan. Who are the critical votes that need to be reached in order to defeat the bill? The form is yours.
Well, you got the perpetrators there right on the money. Jeff Dinowitz in the Assembly and Brad Hoyleman in the Senate are the leaders of this. They introduced the bill originally right after SB 277 passed in California, and that's really their role model. They've actually had Senator Pan out here several times to sort of provide the guidance on what to do. And as the bill stands right now, it's actually far more draconian than SB 277 was. It is extremely difficult already to get a medical exemption in New York. For example, one of the things that we're passing out to legislatures now is some documents that we use the Freedom of Information Law to get from New York City, which shows that they turned down 54% of all the medical exemption applications. And those are applications submitted by licensed physicians. So we've already got that problem here. There is no carve out for kids with IEPs. So that's an individualized education plan for a special education kid, which they had in California. And California, correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe they grandfathered the existing religious exemptions for some populations. And we don't have any of that here. And so the only thing they did is they recently amended it so that instead of requiring a kid to get fully up to date with all the shots that they may be required by the state appropriate for their age before they return to school, they're going to allow them in if they have a plan in place to get caught up. So that's the only sort of mitigating factor that they've introduced. So it's a really draconian plan. And what people need to do, New Yorkers, please only, is contact members of the Assembly Health Committee. And that's where the bill is right now. This is going to be the first vote on it. It's not clear where we stand We know some people who are in favor. We know some people who are opposed. And there's a bunch of people in the middle who don't want to go public with how they stand. So it's not quite clear how this is going to shake out by any means. So if people are interested in doing this, they go to our website, autismactionnetwork.org. We have some links to action alerts with all the phone numbers and addresses and so on for the people on the health committee who we need to reach. And we also have addresses for legislators who we think we can persuade to vote our way if this thing ever ends up on the floor for a vote of the whole assembly. And we are also asking anybody in New York who cares about religious exemptions for the right to bodily autonomy and to make personal medical decisions for ourselves, not by bureaucrats and legislators who are really looking out for the big four drug companies, but also the big four vaccine companies. Then you got to come up to Albany on Tuesday, June 11th, and be heard. We know a large physical presence has impact, and that's what we really need this Tuesday if we're going to stop this thing.
From my side, I'm willing to donate 1,000 to 2,000 documentaries of our latest documentary, Deadly Deception, that shows the politics and profiteering and lack of quality science in the safety and efficacy of vaccines, and who's really behind it, who gets the money. And we need to do three things at the state level. First, we need to know that the corruption of the American Legislative Exchange Council, ALEX, because they're the ones in all 50 states, supported by between 200 to 300, depending upon the time, major corporations. And these are people that meet quietly with state legislators, at least those who are open to it. And then they give them bills that their lobbyists and lawyers have written, bills to either enact something into law or to take something that's in law out, like protections. If the ugly face of ALEX is ever shown of how powerful it is, and it's caused the passage of close to 30,000 laws over the last 30-some years. No one even knew it existed. It was such a well-kept secret until about 5-6 years ago. Now, they're behind all these laws and the draconian measures they're taking against good pediatricians who are wanting to offer exemptions, and they're going after them, trying to get their licensing. They're even going after lawyers and trying to take away lawyers' license who are fighting on behalf of it. This is a police state in operation. And I believe that any legislator, any in America that's ever met with ALEX should resign because they betrayed their trust in the public. Then they're doing the bidding, secret bidding, of major multinational corporations, the globalists, the neocons, and not the residents of their state. That's one. Two, Dr. Pan, I had exposed, and along with all the other Democrats and Republicans in the state of California who voted, and I had how much money they received from the vaccine makers directly to them, showing a pay-to-play and a gross conflict of interest. We also took the vaccines that were being mandated, like the Gardasil vaccine, and wrote definitive articles that were so scholarly they could withstand cross-examination in a court of law. And we were presenting all this information through our KPFA Pacifica Station, Bonnie Faulkner and myself, of Guns and Butter fame, and it was censored. They wouldn't allow us on. The program director wouldn't, and a small group out there wouldn't allow us on. And it was at a time when the vote was virtually equal, and I believe that had we had a chance to lay out the arguments against the legislation and against these mandated vaccines and who was profiting and how corrupt the whole system was, that it might have made a difference. But typical of Pacifica, the most dysfunctional foundation in the world, and the only place you can be guaranteed to be censored in free speech radio, how ironic, that didn't happen. As a result, it passed, narrowly passed. And that is unforgivable. So now in New York State, utterly the most corrupt state in America, with most corrupt cesspool legislation in America, we have this happening, so it's a little wonder that the public may presume that there'll be fair and open debate, that people will look at the evidence prior to making a choice. That's not going to happen. So we have to show up in mass, intelligently protest, get copies of the documentary to the legislators, get copies of the articles on Gardasil and the vaccines would be mandated to the legislators, so at least they have another perspective. If we do that, maybe some that otherwise would vote, depending upon where their future resides, because Alex always makes it, you know, tempting, vote for us and we'll see about your future. And incumbents have, I think it's 85% reelection rate. So that's how I see it. Your final thoughts?
Well, you know, I think everything you were just saying really readily applies to what we're dealing with here in New York. You know, Jeffrey Dinowitz and Senator Hoylman also have bills in the hopper here in Albany to make HPV vaccines mandatory for children that go to school. They also are sponsoring a bill to make flu shots mandatory for all kids in the state for preschool and daycare. So they're quite clearly looking out for the bottom line interests of the vaccine industry. And, you know, it's part and parcel of what you were talking about. So, you know, they got a lot of power, but they don't have all the power. And, you know, we can only exercise our power if we show up and we're heard and visible and stay on them. And I'm hoping, you know, we've been doing that here. We've been fighting them pretty hard. And I believe if we have a large turnout and a great deal of intense scrutiny on these guys for the next couple of weeks, we only got to get to June 19th. That's a really important thing, is that if we can make it to June 19th without this law being passed, the legislature goes home and we're safe for another year at least. So calling out folks, and thanks for the opportunity to talk to the folks, Gary. I really appreciate it.
Well, I can't be there. I would. Last time I took a group of our audience, we had 1,400 show up in Albany, and it stopped the mandation of the vaccines, the flu vaccine, to all health workers, and we got the media there, and we got to meet with the top commissioners and medical doctors. That afternoon, they met with myself representing the science and Michael Schachter on the medical side, and boy, if you talk about a contentious meeting, they were fuming that we, the people, actually were able to stop it. And then it forced hearings. And I want people today, go to YouTube and watch my testimony against these doctors, because they're the ones questioning me, and see how I do not treat them with preferential or deferential enthusiasm. I'm right back at them in their face with scientific facts about everything they were wrong about. And it, typically, they're wrong about everything. So you'll see that for yourself. And but I will send all that I can to support the people who are going there, including articles and documentaries. Thank you very much for being with us, John Gilmore. And John Gilmore, you can go to autismactionnetwork.org on Facebook and get into that system. We need as many people from this audience to be there civilly, intelligently protesting. All right? We have facts. They don't. We have science. They don't. We have the truth with 7 million vaccine-injured parents. They don't. So we have to use what we have against insurmountable objects of power, narcissism, egotism, and self-interest, which is the New York legislature. I'm Gary Noll. Thank you all for listening, and have a nice day.
I'm so in love with you, but.